Hi everyone, I'm Jamili and this is In a Click Podcast. My guest today is Tyler Cohen Wood, a cybersecurity authority, former senior intelligence officer, DOD, keynote speaker, author of Catching the Catfishers, and founder of Cybergirl Power. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Tyler Cohen Wood. What I was really curious to start with was kind of how you found yourself in the world of cybersecurity. Was it kind of serendipitous or did you always kind of envision yourself in this field?
I graduated in the late 90s. So what I do today just didn't exist back then. And I was a sociology history major. And I also interned for a radio station in Boston and a record label. And I was one of those blue haired people that was obsessed with alternative music. And I wanted to be a rock star when I came out of college. Okay. And unfortunately, kind of have to have some talent.
You had some false confidence as a kid.
Yeah, seriously. After I graduated, I moved to New Orleans. And I continued working for the record label, and I became a DJ and also did promotions for one of the music clubs. Mm. And I just loved it. But it was very weird. I just got very interested in computers. And so I moved to San Francisco, which at the time was pretty much the only place that had this big booming tech industry that would hire someone that had a brain but didn't know anything.
Okay. So,
and that's really where I started. But I've always been very, very interested in law enforcement and protecting victims. And that's really why I moved into cybersecurity and then eventually into federal law enforcement, doing forensic cases, digital forensic cases, and then eventually moved to the Defense Intelligence Agency as a senior intelligence officer and a cyber branch chief, then deputy division chief. So I had my hand in so much within that intelligence community, and yeah, I loved that job. And I was very happy there, but I had a agent that I had worked with for at Department of Defense Cybercrime Center, and he called me about this case that he had, and it was just such a terrible case. So they got this guy who was arrested for distribution of child porn, and as the forensic examiner was looking through the guy's computer, he noticed that he had been chatting with an 11-year-old girl and he knew everything about her. He convinced this girl that he knew her. He knew everything. And fortunately, they never met because he was caught for something else. And the examiner's like, how did he know all this stuff? This is weird. So he noticed that the guy had been going to the mother's social media pages, her blogs, and her dating sites, everything that she had. And she had no privacy settings on anything. And she just was very, very vocal about everything that her kids were doing. Mm. And she even at the time had a blog where she'd post pictures with her kids. And for those of you not familiar with EXIF data, it's information in the photo about the camera. But what that includes is the location of where the photo was taken. So he had that information too. You know, most social media sites will strip the information out so no one can download it. But this was back, you know, in 13, she had a blog page and it was very, very easy to do.
Well, at this point, too, people tag themselves where they are in the city anyway. So it's almost like we give our own location regularly, regardless.
You're 100% right. I mean, we do.
And yeah.
So I got, I was very upset by this case. And I asked him, you know, wait a minute, you know, there's got to be a book or something that very easily helps parents and kids understand with checklists that are very simple to do, how to vet if who you're talking to is who they say they are, and really how to protect yourself, your privacy, your reputation in the online domain. And I couldn't find it, so I wrote it. And, you know, with this book, I started doing a lot of public speaking and media, and very difficult to be in the intelligence community at a senior level and to be doing media interviews. So I really had to make a choice if I wanted to move to the private sector and continue working with this to help kids, or, you know, stay within the intelligence community. And I chose to go out into the private sector because this was something that was just very important to me.
It's a noble decision, though. The public has been really blind to most of the issues, especially as more technology is advancing and we can't keep up with it. We have no legal protection if someone wants to take our faces and our bodies and put it into some fake video. There's nothing that we can do right now. And so even like the legal system isn't keeping up with all of these technological advancements. I think that the decision you made was probably not an easy one, but also ensuring that the public knows is probably an even more effective way to make a difference, because at least then we can start protecting ourselves first versus having something happen to us and then start protecting ourselves.
Exactly. You know, that was really the mission. And now more than ever, we have to take cybersecurity and these techniques seriously, mm-hmm. because we are at greater risk than we ever have been before. Kids are now stuck at home. They're cooped up. You know, they want to have some kind of contact. So they're turning more to social media and online gaming. And unfortunately, predators know this and they use these types of tools and techniques to try to lure kids so that they can, you know, coax them into something. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, they're probably not going to be able to meet up these days.
Yes.
That's good.
That is good news. But nonetheless, sending a photo is very easy, you know, and that's really, really scary too.
I kind of hate saying this because no one's done it yet, but I think it's more important to make people aware of the types of things that can happen. And one of those is teachers are just sending lessons that the kids, they download and they do the lessons. And if I was a hacker and I wanted to get to a CEO, I would either hack into the teacher's computer or make something that looked very much like the name of the teacher. Like if the teacher's name was Tyler, right. You know, maybe I'd use a 1 instead of an L. So it looks like it's actually coming from them. And parents or kids will then download whatever it is. And we really want to be cautious about the different things that can happen. And, you know, I will just say that, you know, working from home, you want to make sure that you have segmented off your work computer from the rest of the network. And you can do that. Most of your providers will allow guest networking. Mm-hmm. And there's other options too for separating your machine from the kids' machines.
Okay.
And I just, while we're on the topic, I also very highly recommend, if you are working from home, make sure that all of your IoT devices are also not in the same room with you, especially if they have the ability to record anything that you're doing and put them on their own network.
I always turn my Siri off just because I think maybe I'm more paranoid than most people, but
I do too. I do too.
But not many people do.
I don't know.
We just have to make sure that they're either in a separate room or that they're turned off then if we're not using it.
Right. And make sure they're on a different network. Even if and when we all go back to work, you know, make sure your workspace doesn't have a smart TV in the conference room connected to the rest of your network. You want to take the principles of separating things on their own little mini networks so that your work computer and your work phone are less likely to be attacked.
I'm curious if in your line of work, if you've ever kind of had to hire somebody to try to hack into an account to ensure that it's secure. Like, you know what I mean? Is there anything like that going on?
So being paid by a business, right. Like to do penetration testing.
Right.
I've done that.
Oh, no way. You have. Interesting.
Yeah. But that was such a long time ago.
Okay. You know, I was having a really interesting conversation about, brain cloud interfaces. Have you heard of, they're just like these chips that you would basically put into the back of your brain and you could download information literally directly into your brain. And basically within 20 years, Elon Musk is saying this is a possibility and it's going to be happening. I'm writing a paper about it right now and it's mind blowing. But one of the questions I had was like, how can you ensure that no one's going to hijack your brain? Like how do we ensure that no one's going to hack into this chip that's in your brain? That's so intense. And they were just basically saying that the password would continuously alter and change so that you couldn't hack it because no one really knows the password anyways. And I don't know what the reality is. I think there's a lot of security issues that are going to go into that. But writing this paper, I'm really mind boggled because I see the possibilities. I can really help people with various disability issues. But at the same time, I think there's like access issues. Like obviously this is going to cost a lot of money.
So it is. That is interesting. And I do see that as being a possible tool that we are using in a few years. And people have started putting implants, like a grain of rice in their hand. And the implants help you pay for things at your business, log on to your machine. Yeah, so these implants are coming. And the problem with them is nothing is secure. Nothing is going to be secure 100% of the time. And it may be secure now, but it won't be tomorrow. So as long as there are continuous updates to it, and it's technology that can really benefit and change a person's life and their quality of life for the better, as long as we do everything that we can to secure it, you just have to weigh the risks versus the benefits.
Exactly.
But any device that is connected is maybe not now, but at one day is going to be hackable. That's just the territory.
Yeah, I mean, every piece of technology we use, it's always potentially threatening, but it's also always potentially going to benefit us in really extreme and like extravagant ways. It really boils down to our intention. Mm-hmm. It's just moving so quickly that it's a bit overwhelming sometimes.
Yes. And I've seen some technologies coming out. They're working on a database to basically make a person who is deceased so you can sort of still communicate with that person.
Oh, no.
And of course, my mind goes to just ridiculous places where I, of course, then see that putting into like a human robot form that...
Oh, my God. What is that show called? Have you ever watched Black Mirror?
No.
There's an episode about that.
Are you serious?
I swear to you, this woman's husband dies and they download his consciousness into like, I don't know, some type of chip. And then they put it into this robot man who looks like her husband. So they didn't download his consciousness. Sorry. They basically downloaded all of the information he put online to form an identity. And so that's the thing. Oh my gosh. That really freaks me out. But yeah, they did an episode on that. So we'll definitely look into that.
I am going to watch that.
It's eerie. It really, and in the end, it didn't work out because she's like, you're not my husband, which I think it's always going to boil down to that. And grief is already so difficult. It's just, to me, it just seems like
my concern with it is if you're just downloading the knowledge that person had and keeping it in a knowledge database, for future generations, I mean, I don't know, but that is something that could either be incredible or could go terribly wrong.
It would be, if it was intentional, like if I knew I was going to die and I intentionally wanted to pass down information to my kids or to my grandkids or to my husband, fine. I think that's fair. That's like leaving a love letter or something.
Right. I do too.
Yeah. But if it's not my intent and I didn't... I don't know. It's too blurry. The line is too blurry right now. But it's, to me, the whole grieving bit, I feel like I think of my dad and I'm like, oh my God, it would drive him nuts. He would just sit there and like listen to this thing of me over and over again. I know he would.
I would drive
him nuts.
Absolutely.
But I guess everyone's different. So I have to keep that in mind. Oh my gosh, this is really overwhelming. There's a couple listener questions. One is about cloud security. And so how much protection and security do we actually have when we use the cloud?
Yeah. Well, things are getting better.
Okay.
But again, it's going to depend on the cloud. It's also going to depend on things that you may not have even thought about. Like, for example, do you remember, was it last year or was it 2 years ago that there was an issue with one of the Intel chips that was in a lot of the servers that are on shared cloud services, and it would allow hackers to get in the different companies' instances.
Oh.
So it could be a hardware issue. It could be, you know, maybe you're not using the proper security methods. You're not using two-factor authentication, or you've got an easy-to-use password. Do you remember the cloud hacks of celebrities back in, was that 2016?
Where vaguely.
I think what they did was that they kind of just brute force guessed the passwords.
Mm-hmm. Oof. So, after watching some of your videos, I was like, I really do need to be a bit more careful about the passwords that I use, especially the things I want to protect. Like, I should probably make those a bit more difficult to detect, you know?
Yes. But, and I think in terms of cloud, there's so many good options out there, and they're all doing what they can to make it secure. And I think that they're doing a really good job with keeping up with what they're seeing out in the wild.
So sometimes in the back of my head, I almost think they're setting us up for failure, but it's reassuring to hear you say that they actually have our best interests in mind.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But one of the things that worries me is you're only going to be as secure as whatever the weakest link is in the transmission of data to the cloud and back. And if you're doing it on your phone, well, to me, that is easily going to be the weakest link, unless you have some sort of protection on your phone, because there's a lot of Wi-Fi hacks. You know, one of the things I would recommend is you go into your Wi-Fi settings, and you make sure that you are not auto-joining Wi-Fi or auto-joining hotspots, that you are to be asked every time before joining that. Because otherwise, if you have a network around you, you will be auto-joined to a network, and you may not even know what that network is. It could be a malicious network. And this is something that, you know, hackers have been doing really for years. What they can do is they can set up these rogue stingray stations, and essentially you get put on their network and you don't even know it unless you have that setting on your phone set up to say, hey, do you want to join this network? So you could temporarily be put on a malicious actor's network. Whether it's wireless, whether you're in Starbucks, whether you're walking by the station, and when you're on their network, what do they have access to on your phone? Well, they can update it, but it isn't going to be a real update.
Oh my goodness. I didn't even think about that.
So really in that part of it, what's the weakest link? The weakest link then is going to be the phone, or it's going to be the laptop. If you know, you're at a coffee shop, you know, it's something that you really want to be very, very, very careful about. And,
okay.
You know, if it's an unsecure network, I always recommend either use your phone or get one of the little, or your company would buy you one of the little personal hotspots.
Okay, that's smart.
But at the same time, I think it's really important for people to know and understand, just because it seems like there's all these scary, scary threats out there, it doesn't mean that you can't empower yourself by learning what, and it doesn't even, I'm not talking about learning how to code, but just sort of some sort of basic cybersecurity techniques and methodologies to protect yourself, your family, and your business. And I know there's some amazing cybersecurity awareness companies. You know, KnowBe4 is incredible. And there's tons of them. They're great.
Okay.
And they help. And I really do believe they've stopped quite a few threats because people have been taking the training. They know not to click on suspicious URLs. But here's the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is that we make the assumption as cybersecurity experts that everybody else cares as much about security and is thinking about it in the same way that we are. And, you know, how often do you think about cybersecurity? And it doesn't mean that everybody in different verticals doesn't take it seriously, but it can be one of those, it wouldn't happen to me kind of things, or what do I have? But you actually, you have a lot at stake.
Well, this is it.
Family, business, everything that, that you do, reputation.
For me, I always think about women my age or younger girls, especially in terms of dating, like sending like risky photos is super normalized. And that's, it's just a natural, normal part of like dating and flirting that I think we just have to wrap our head around. You know what I mean? It's new and it is what it is. But if they decided to, I would just want to make sure that they have all of the information that they need to make informed decisions about their actions and to protect themselves regardless, you know? And that leads me to another listener question, which is super related. And they're asking, well, they've been told that once you put something online, like once you send something through WhatsApp or any kind of application, that it's in cyberspace forever. It never is actually deleted. And they want to know if that's valid or...
That is valid.
Oh, wow. That's scary.
It is valid because think about what it goes through, and there's encryption used on these things. But even if you just go by the fact that you just sent a photo to somebody and the photo will disappear after a certain amount of time, there's nothing to stop them from taking a screen capture of that photo. Absolutely not. And so this is how I think about it. If I went and handed you a photo of me, or doing something, you know, I don't know, illegal or whatever, and said, don't show this to anybody, you know, then I say to you, okay, I need that photo back, you know, a year later or something. Well, come on.
Yeah.
You once something is out, you don't have control over it anymore. I am of the mind that if you do not want for somebody to be able to see this, don't send it.
That's good advice. I think because these phones become attached to us, like almost an extension of ourselves, we forget that they are an extension of ourselves, that we forget that there are so many innate risks and we don't even realize that we're just carrying it around in our hands and in our back pocket all day long without thinking about these things. And I think, thank you. Because we need to have these conversations and people really do need to start thinking more critically about the things that they're sending and doing, especially this younger generation who my whole dissertation is about like what they're learning in school about technology. And this is certainly not one of the things that is prioritized in the curriculum or in the classroom. So there's a huge gap in knowledge and it can be really scary, especially as these young people grow up into parents and have to protect their younger kids. There's like a complete lack of this kind of transmission of information. I think that what you're doing is really incredible.
Cool. Thank you. And that's why I'm starting Cyber Girl Power.
Right.
It was initially meant to be a conference, a physical conference, to teach young girls how to protect themselves in the online domain, but also through actually doing, learn how to code, have a scenario where they're talking to somebody on a computer to determine if they can tell using techniques, how to vet of who they're talking to, who they say they are, and really give them these types of skills so that they not only know how to protect themselves, but so that they can be our future thought leaders in cybersecurity.
Oh, it's and so empowering.
It helps parents too, because the techniques now that we're talking about, these are techniques that employees, families, educators, parents, they need to be aware of these things too. And it's really designed to help them. So what I'm doing now with it is I'm turning it into an online conference series. So it's a place for parents and kids to talk and learn about the different types of cyber threats, but also really learning some very, very usable skills that can help make them feel very empowered and want to go into these types of STEM careers.
I love that you're a woman leading this program as well, because you make me feel safe and I trust you. And I think that that's such a great space for young girls to be learning, because I don't think that there are very many spaces in school or in the community where it's intimate and there's a trust established first, where you can be vulnerable and really talk about the things that you're struggling with and dealing with and seeing online. And I think that this could make a really, really huge impact. And I see such great potential on this. So I really hope it takes off.
Thank you. I really hope so too, because I worry about these kids, because I know the other side. And if I can stop one person from becoming a victim of a predator, whether it's an actual predator that intends to do harm to your child, whether it's someone who is trying to con you out of money, or it's someone who is after your business, your credentials, or something related to that, I have to, if I can just stop one of these things from happening, then I've done what I intended to do. I mean, actually, I really want to be able to help everybody, but
yeah. But I think the younger generation is probably the place to start. And especially if their parents are involved, then there's like this intergenerational transfer of knowledge. And that's such an incredible way to move forward.
And educators too. I mean, we have an opportunity right now that we can really shape and change curriculums to add cybersecurity into the programs, because cybersecurity is something that we live with on a daily basis. Everything that we touch is cyber, and we have become in the past month, I'd say 90% reliant on the internet. We don't want to be sitting ducks. I talked to one girl who I'm going to put on the podcast, because she just so funny. She's turning 7.
Oh,
and she's so smart. She's very serious, and she tells me that she wants to become a cybersecurity engineer, because she knows that they make a ton of money, a ton of money. And that way my friends and I can become engineers and make a ton of money so that we can open up a beach resort.
And I like her.
This girl is going places. I mean, really, because that was something I hadn't even thought of as an incentive to get girls into cybersecurity, is that it can be financially lucrative.
And exactly.
She's 7, and she just...
She sees it. I was not that smart at 7.
Oh my gosh, I was an idiot at 7. I really very happy that we did not have social media when I was growing up.
No, yeah, thank you.
Need everyone in the world knowing about my creepy Star Trek phase.
They're just so creative.
Yeah, and they power.
Exactly. And I think we can learn so much more from them than we even imagine. Like, the solutions they come up with are so brilliant. And I think that we can make a big difference in the education system as well. If we know what they're doing in their personal lives and what interests them, then we can then make school more intriguing and more interesting as well. But what the research tells us is that they are innovative and intelligent and creative, but they aren't always given the tools to be critical of those, of the technologies that they're using. And so if we can bridge that gap, like, the possibilities are endless.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And also, it's so important too that these girls have a space like Cyber Girl Power where they can geek out if they want. And
totally.
They don't have to feel insecure, or they don't have to feel, you know, like they
stigmatized.
Have to let the boys win or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not excluding boys from Cyber Girl Power. It's for them too, but it really is a space for girls, because, you know, in my experience, just what I've seen makes me really, really, really very passionate about protecting kids.
Right. My last just quick question is, like, what is the first thing that you should do if you're like, oh, I've just been hacked?
First thing that you should do, I'm so glad you brought this up. I recommend having a home incident response policy. If you click, or your kids click on something, and all of a sudden they start seeing a ransomware note or something along those lines, immediately turn the network connectivity off of that device. Ooh. Back in the day, we used to say pull the plug. Mm-hmm. If you pull the plug, make sure you remove the battery if you can too, but you want all connectivity off.
Okay.
Turn off that network connectivity in all ways, shapes, and form. Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. If it happens to your kids, say, you're not going to get in trouble if this happens, but you immediately must shut off the phone. So that's another thing in the incident response plan. Make sure that you back up what you're doing in a very safe manner. I'm sure that your business will, or your company will have a cloud service that you can make sure that things are backed up to, and it may automatically do it. Mm-hmm. But again, you also just want to make sure that anything that you're sending into the corporate network, that you are secure, your system is secure.
Okay, great advice. Tyler, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so informative as always. And I just want to thank you again for making such a giant impact in the tech field, especially for young girls. I'm really excited about the project and really just so happy to have met you. I've learned so much.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, you're making such a huge difference too. And I'm honored to have met you. And I'm very, very much looking forward to having you on cybergirlpower.com.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I'd love to hear what you think and anything more or less that you'd like to learn about. Comment here, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at jamilee.baroud, jamilee.baroud. Until next time, shine light online, and I'll talk to you soon.